get ready.
Man, this whole society got our women looking at themselves crazy, man. Can you imagine if a dude was walking around telling him he didn't want to wear a pair of khakis because it made his dick look big, man?
For real talk?
You ain't ready for the relationship your grandmother and granddaddy had. You ready to leave your dude if he don't text you back fast enough.
All the time.
And see, that's what's so crazy to me, right? Because you can be against police brutality and not want cops to die. The two ideas ain't mutually exclusive.
Welcome to the Span Report with your host, Mr. Span.
Yo, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Span Report podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Span, and this is episode number 68 of the report. And yeah, man, it's been about a week since the last time I talked to you guys. Hopefully you guys enjoyed the interview I did with a friend of the show and founder of Taurus Protection Agency, Taurus Fields, man. Hope you guys got a lot from that interview, just in as far as how to do business and some security tips and all that other stuff. I hope you guys enjoyed that. But there's been some other things. There's been some other things that's been going on in the world that I kind of want to touch on this episode of the Span Report. But before we get started into all of that, I got to let you guys know how you can get in touch with me here at the Span Report podcast and let your voice be heard. Of course, you can hit me up at the hotline at area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave me those voicemail messages. I will play those messages on the show, and I, of course, will respond to those messages on the show. I haven't gotten a voicemail in quite a while, so I'm looking for some voicemails. Also, you can hit me up on the email, which seems to be everybody's favorite way to do it. and the new email, of course, is feedback@thespanreport.com. That's feedback@thespanreport.com. Send me those emails. I will read those emails and, of course, respond to those emails on the show. Got some of those today to get to. Also, if you want to chop it up with your man, you can hit me up on Twitter and Instagram. My name, of course, is Mr_Span on both of those platforms. Mr_Span on Twitter and Instagram. And for all of your Span Report needs, go to thespanreport.com. All the podcasts, all the videos, all of the Span TV videos, everything associated with the podcast, everything associated with the Span Report, you can go there. Also, check your man out on iTunes and Stitcher and on Pocket Cast and wherever else you get your podcast, you can find the Span Report podcast available there. Leave me some Stitcher reviews. Leave me some iTunes reviews. Those are really good ways to help spread the word about the show and to get other people involved in taking out what we're doing over here. So, yes, indeed, do that for me, please, and thank you. All right. Now, of course, like I said, man, it's been about a week since the last time I talked to you guys, and there have been some things that have been going on. One of the biggest things that have been going on around here in Detroit, there was a story about a mother who killed two of her kids and left them kids in a freezer. So I will be discussing that on this episode. I also will be talking about Tidal, the new music service that Jay-Z and Beyonce and J. Cole and Madonna and Rihanna and all of these other major music stars have ownership in. We're going to talk about that new service and whether or not it's a feasible thing, whether or not it's a new way to listen to music, whether or not it'll be something that jumps off. You know, so we're going to talk about that a bit. And we're really going to talk about this Indiana Religious Freedom Act law that was signed into law recently by Governor Mike Pence over in Indiana, and some of the rhetoric and some of the everything that goes around that, everything surrounding that, and how it's discrimination against LGBT people. How it's playing out, pretty much. Let's just talk about how it's playing out. But you know what? I got a couple random thoughts that I kind of wanted to get to. And I just wanted to share these with you guys. I'm not sure if you guys follow me on Facebook. I kind of made mention of these things earlier in the week. I was at work, man. It was a couple things that were happening. And one of the things that happened, I'm wondering, am I the only one who does this, right? So I drive a truck. I drive a really big truck at work. It's a commercial size vehicle, big dump truck. Sometimes I'm towing a really big machine behind me while I'm driving. And I understand that a lot of times folks don't really want to, they're uncomfortable driving around large trucks. They're uncomfortable, you know, being around these vehicles and what have you. And sometimes they drive really aggressive. Sometimes they'll come up on my right side and they'll try to pass there, or they'll get in front of me and make a, you know, a really abrupt stop, which makes it hard for me to stop my truck because I got so much weight and momentum going. So it's like, it really, kind of gets harrowing trying to be safe while driving around some of these vehicles. But the one thing that always gets me is when I see like someone with a handicap sticker driving really aggressively, right? And so when I see a handicapped person driving aggressively, I think a few things, right? One of the things is this motherfucker ain't learned his lesson yet. Right? Now, that's not to say that I know how they got it to a point where they had to have a handicap sticker, and that may just be a little older or whatever, but whatever it is, all of your capacity isn't available to you for which you have this handicap sticker. So that's one of the things I always think about, right? This motherfucker ain't learned this lesson yet. And two, I think this is the reason why they ass need to park in the back like everybody else. Yeah, sir. I know it's a fucked up thing to say. It's a fucked up thing to say. But every time I see somebody with a handicap sticker or a handicap license plate and they're driving really aggressively, I think that one, they ain't learned their fucking lesson, and two, they need to park in the back like everybody else. Obviously, ain't nothing wrong with this motherfucker, right? So yeah, man, I was thinking about that, man. That was one of those random thoughts that I had. I know I can't be the only one who thinks that, but I know those are one of the things that I have been thinking about earlier in this week. And another thing too that I wanted to know was people who like Amber Alerts, right? There was an Amber Alert that went out in the Metro Detroit area earlier in the week. And I think I got it on my cell phone. It was about maybe 3 o'clock in the morning. The shit did wake me up. It woke me up. But one of the things that I thought was interesting was how many people that I knew who also got that Amber Alert were so annoyed with it, right? Like, it was such an annoyance to them. It was such it imposed itself on their day or their sleep or whatever. So they really didn't appreciate it. And it was interesting how many people got on Facebook bitching about, man, why the hell did they send an Amber Alert at 3 o'clock in the morning? Like, what kind of shit is this, man? That shit scared the fuck out of me. And they made all of these bitching remarks about Amber Alerts, right? And one of the first things, of course, that I think about is when we see Crime Stoppers pleads of family when there's like a murder victim or something, and or there are missing kids sometimes, and there aren't always Amber Alerts put out, when the parents of these kids and the family members of these victims get on, you know, television and they beg everyone for information leading to the solving of this case, or, you know, to help find their family member, or to find the killer of said family member. And there's always this plea to help us do this, right? So with that being said, it seems to me like it would be cut and dry to, like, you know what, even if I don't have any information about this, then it shouldn't be an issue for me to get an alert and kind of pass that information on as I have it, right? So to see so many people bitching about it, it's like, you know what, it would be really strange, or it would be really interesting if something were to happen to a member of your family and you would be one of those folks imploring everyone to send in information, to make those phone calls and everything else. So yeah, I thought it was real kind of fucked up. And I said to a lot of them people, yo, fuck you, because that's kind of fucked up that you would even that you found that as a reason to bitch and moan about whether or not you got an Amber Alert at night, right? And then another thing too, that folks were also, you know, there was a lot of racial animosity with the Amber Alert, right? So it's like, yo, if it was a black kid, man, they wouldn't be putting out these Amber Alerts, man. This is some bullshit. And no one, usually the people who would say that are those who hadn't taken the time at all to educate themselves as to what the processes are in order to have an Amber Alert issued. And so I just started dropping like the FAQ of the Amber Alert for everybody who asks that shit, like, why ain't they showing this shit for black kids and all this other stuff? It's a process to get an Amber Alert issued. Maybe these people need to follow the processes to get the Amber Alerts issued. That's all I was saying. But yeah, that was a couple of the things that had kind of went on during the week that I was just like really random for me. And I just wanted to share those with you guys as well, man. Now, One of the things, like I said, I wanted to talk about, and it's a really fucked up story, real sad story, is about the woman who killed her children, who killed her two children and put them in a freezer. So before I even give any of my my commentary on that, let me introduce the story to you guys here just a second.
And we have breaking news. We're learning why a mother may have killed two of her children, then stashed their bodies in a freezer.
Yeah, 7 Action News reporter Jeff Vaughn. He is live on Detroit's east side with the latest. Jeff, what are police thinking?
Malcolm, good evening. That motive tonight is expanding. Sources tell me the mother accused of killing her two children and stuffing them in a freezer here at this condominium complex tried to keep it a secret so she could continue to draw child support from the state.
Action News uncovering the latest details from all angles on the case of two children found dead in a freezer. As the bodies of the two siblings thaw at the medical examiner's office, their grandmother identifying the bodies, then talking to our Jonathan Carlson.
We just, you know, just went to you know, see, you know, if it was her or not, and it was.
The names of the children in the freezer reported by Action News last night and positively identified today by police is Stoney Blair, 13 at the time that she was placed in that freezer 2 years ago. Her half-brother, Stephen Berry, placed beside her at the age of 9, more than a year ago. Police say their mother, Michelle Angela Blair, confessed to killing the children. Blair's grandmother, Linda Dorsey, reacts to our cameras today.
I think she's basically sick, not too good at all.
The family tonight claiming the 35-year-old mother, called Angel by loved ones and friends, was abused as a kid and fear that's why she may have abused her own children. Kicked out of her parents' house when she was 17 and pregnant with a tattoo on her chest that reads, "Trust no one." The motive for the killings, sources say, but not substantiated by police, is sexual abuse from the dead siblings onto the youngest of the two remaining siblings, a boy, age 11, now in protective custody with the 17-year-old sister, keeping the secret from family and friends in a freezer behind the store at 804 St. Aubin of the Martin Luther King condo complex.
Michelle Blair will appear in court tomorrow. However, she will not be charged with murder. That is yet to be determined as that autopsy is pending. However, she will appear in court and be charged with 4 counts of first-degree child abuse, 2 for the dead children and 2 for the surviving children. Sources tell me those 2 surviving children have signs of trauma. By the way, tonight they are in protective custody. Also, Michelle Blair will face 1 count of child abuse in the presence of another child, and that is a life felony. Reporting tonight from Detroit, I'm Jeff Vaughn, 7 Action News.
All right. Now, there have been some updates as far as the charges to this woman are concerned. I think they did upgrade the charges to murder for this woman, and rightfully so, rightfully so. And as sad as this story is, as sad as this shit is, it brings forth so many questions. It brings forth so many questions that I'm sure a lot of people have, right? Because one of the first things I want to know is, where are the fathers of these kids, right? Because I know for one, there was one dad who he's been interviewed a couple times by the local news here. And I will include those videos on thespanreport.com, so you can check those videos out for yourself. But he's going on about, you know, trying to see his children, or at least he spoke about trying to see his children, and that he may have been denied the ability to see his kids because, you know, she was holding out for more child support or using the child support against him, and he was behind in his payments or whatever, right? So, you know, even with that, you know, one knows that he can go to court and petition the court for, you know, orders in order to see his kids. You know, even if he was behind, I'm pretty sure there are processes in place for a man to go to the court and force a woman to make, you know, make his children available during for visitation. Right. So I know one of the fathers showed up at the courthouse during her arraignment. He didn't speak to the media at that particular point, but he has spoken to the media about not being able to see the kids. But also there have been, you know, reports of, you know, a lot of family members having not seen these kids for a couple years, And it's like, how does that happen? How many times does the excuse of, or they're, you know, oh, they're over at their grandmother's house. Oh, they're over at their cousin's house or anything like that. How many times can you tell people that before folks start figuring out, hey, something ain't right? We ain't seen these kids in a long time. We haven't seen them in forever. It's been a long time. How do you go 2 years without seeing these kids? And so that was another thing, like the negligence of the surrounding family and how involved they could have been in, like, maybe getting some resolution to this sooner as opposed to it being a 2 year thing. Another thing too, you know, I understand that they said the schooling, like the school system, of course, didn't send any truant officers or anything like that to check up on the kids because she was supposedly taking them out of school for homeschooling, right? So I know a lot of folks had questions about whether or not, you know, why the school didn't send anybody out. But what I do want to know is why didn't child welfare, why didn't any welfare agencies, because she was receiving assistance for these kids and these kids' fathers were on child support. Why she didn't, why no one sent anybody out for to check on these kids' welfare, right? You know, like even there has to be some sort of like doctor's appointment. Like you have to keep your kids' shots in order. You have to keep your kids, you know, your living conditions, like all of these things. A lot of times it used to be you had a worker who kept track of these sort of things. But how we got to a point where these kids could be dead for 2 years and she was still able to collect benefits from the state and from child support or whatever without producing or showing any, you know, showing any proof that these kids were in a right environment, you know. And we could talk about the mental, you know, the mental aspect of one, you know, they mentioned in the story that she had been abused as a child and that she had the tattoo that said trust no one and all of these other things. But can you imagine like the two children who lived, what they were walking around with, the fear that they had knowing that their mother killed their brother and their sister and that they were in the freezer at home? Can you imagine walking around with that in your head? Can you imagine, like, that's got to be a really, really, really fucked up thought to be walking around with all the time, knowing that you're constantly scared of your mother, knowing that you could pay the ultimate price if your mother gets that upset with you. It's a really sad story. And it's just there's no other way to put it. It's just a really, really sad and fucked up story. Like, it's something that you feel like you would see in a movie or that you would read about in a movie. To have it happen here in Detroit, yeah, man, it's one of those things that you would find in like a, well, shit, now I'm pretty sure it may be a Lifetime movie made about this, unfortunately, you know. But to think of the conditions in which one has to be, or the mental condition one has to be in to walk around knowing that their mom had killed their brother or sister, I think I'm worried, you know, I'm more so concerned about the living kids at this point than anything else. You know, the kind of mental scars that they're going to have to deal with for the rest of their lives, knowing that they walked around with that kind of secret and that kind of knowledge in their heads. And I also, you know, not even trying to place judgment or place blame, but I do want to know, like, how involved the surrounding family was, you know, with those kids to a point where this can go on for at least 2 years and no one be the wiser. You know, the neighbors, you know, kids are wondering where these kids are at, and they want to know where, you know, you've been, they want to come out and play, like, hey, where's such and such? And you ain't seen this kid in 2 years. Like, well, he's always at his grandma's house, or he's always at his cousin's house, or he's always at an aunt's house. Like, they're always gone, but these other two are always here. So a lot of it, it just doesn't make sense. It's just scary, man. It's scary to think that we have people that are walking around capable of that and able to function normally to a certain degree, to where folks wouldn't suspect that you would do something like that to your kids. You got your kids dead in a freezer at home and you go around with life as if everything is okay. That's a scary person to be around. So I really do hope those surviving kids are able to heal some sort of way after having to deal with an issue like this here, man. But moving on, because I don't want to bog the show down in all just horror and death and misery and anything like that. But I do kind of want to move on. I want to talk a bit about this new service Tidal, right? This new music service Tidal, Jay-Z, Rihanna, Alicia Keys, J. Cole, I think Daft Punk, Madonna, a lot of major music acts were in attendance when they launched or they announced the new launch of Tidal, which is supposed to be a high fidelity or high definition lossless music service, right? Which you can pay anywhere between $10 and $20 a month for to access their music. And, you know, it's one of those things where it's getting to a point where, like, the music space is getting a bit crowded when it comes to streaming services are concerned, right? Because I believe Apple has a streaming service that's out. Samsung has a music streaming service that's out. I think it's called Milk. You have Pandora. You have... what's that? Spotify. You have Google Play Music All Access, and you have Tidal, and you have Beats Music, which I think Apple actually bought Beats and incorporated that into their service. So yeah, you got so many of these services that are streaming music, right? And we've seen so many stories about how the artists aren't exactly happy with these streaming services because they aren't receiving the amount of monies that they think they are entitled to for their music being played on these services, right? And so Jay-Z comes out, or, you know, they announced this new service, and it's $10 to $20 a month. And you get access to, you know, like I said, the high fidelity music. You get access to, you know, music videos and everything else. And it's been kind of met with a bit of a mixed reaction, right? Because of the fact that you have so many of these other services, and these other services are providing a lot of the things that Tidal is promoting at a cheaper price than what Tidal is promoting, right? So you got a lot of things here. You got a lot of different things at work here, right? Because I'm old enough to remember when folks used to actually go to places like Sam Goody and buy CDs, right? I used to work at an airport, so I used to buy CDs at full price at the airport, right? And I had like my CD book, and I didn't even keep the jewel cases, but I would take the booklet out and put it in with my CD into my little CD binder and everything else. And it was, you know, you had that experience, right? People aren't necessarily buying music that way anymore, especially with the advent of Napster, where you can pretty much download, you know, when Napster came out, you could download any song you wanted. You could take any song you wanted off of any album and you could listen to that. And it changed the way in which folks consume their music, right? Because now you don't have to buy like an entire album if all you really like were maybe three or four songs off of the album, right? And this is where I think the artists have to take a bit of the blame in some of their own demise, is that they, you know, it got to a point where the albums were so much, they were so much filler on the albums, right? It was like what you would call a formula. You know, an album would come out with maybe 16 tracks on it. You may like five or six of those 16, but in order for it to be a full length album, you may have gotten 16, maybe even 20 tracks. Sometimes some folks came out with double albums. I remember the Blueprint 2, a double album. I remember R. Kelly, when I actually still listened to R. Kelly, with the R album. That was a double album, right? A lot of songs, but you might not have liked all of the songs, but you paid full price for all of them. So when you got a service like Napster, and you know, Napster then goes into LimeWire and then FrostWire, and all of these file sharing services started popping up, and folks were able to just download the music and the songs that they wanted, and they putting them on their iPods, and they're putting them on their Zooms. Remember that shit? They're putting them on these MP3 players and everything else. And folks have gotten to a point, it's been long enough now to where you got a generation of kids that don't know nothing about going to the store and buying CDs or buying albums. They buy everything through iTunes. They buy everything through Amazon's Prime service. They buy everything through Google's Play service. So they've never gone to a store to buy an album. They have the option now to just go in. They'll listen to a song. They'll buy that song. Or they'll buy four or five songs off of the album, but they'll never buy the whole album because they don't like all of the songs on the album. So a lot of that revenue has kind of gone away for the artists, right? So then you go to, for a person like myself who did, I ain't gonna lie, I have downloaded music before. I can't tell you the last time I bought a CD. I can't tell you the last time I actually downloaded an album, right? Because I actually, I use one of the streaming services now. I actually use Google Play Music All Access, right? And with that service, like, it's like $7. I think I pay $8 a month. I get access to, I get access to pretty much everything that's out, damn near. Like, when an album drops, if Google Play Music has it available, I could search it up and boom, it's there. I could just hit it, add to my library. Now, I may not necessarily own it, but I could listen to that album as much as I want to, right? And then the songs that I actually do own, up to 20,000 songs, they're holding it for me for free, and I can stream those as well, right? So not only do I have my own 20,000 songs or up to 20,000 songs saved in there, but then I got access to all of this other music. And if there's a music video associated with that song, I could just hit the play button in the middle of the screen and boom, it takes me to YouTube and I could watch the music video, right? And then you got services like Spotify, the same thing. Albums available on Spotify, boom, you can listen to it and there it is. You never had to buy the album. And so I think what Jay-Z and what these other artists are trying to do, of course, is to take a lot of the power away from these labels who put this music out on these services at very little, and they get very little in return because of it, you know, because of their work. The record labels may be benefiting from this, but the artists themselves, not so much, which is why Tidal is so important to them now, right? Because they want a bigger share of their work, right? And one of the things that I think about this title, this whole title thing, is that unless artists like Jay-Z, Alicia Keys, Beyonce, J. Cole, and others, unless they decide that they're going to take their music off of these other, you know, these other platforms, then it's going to be a real tough uphill climb for a title to become relevant in this space. Right? Because again, you have these other services who have their entire catalogs already available on their services and they're charging you less money than Tidal is charging you. Like I said, I don't know how much. I think Spotify is maybe $10. And like I said, I pay $8 a month for Google Play Music All Access. And there's Amazon Prime. So there's so many different services that already offer these benefits that the Tidal is trying to put forth. So I think for the most part, it's a very ambitious thing for these artists to do. One of the things I do worry about is like the indie artist, right? You know, the person who doesn't have the cachet of a Jay-Z or an Alicia Keys and everywhere else. I think for them, they're going to want their music available on all platforms so that they can have more access to more listeners, right? And it's just one of those things where, again, like I think what's going to happen with Jay-Z and all these other artists, they're going to, of course, I think what's going to happen with Tidal is they're going to start releasing their albums on Tidal first. There'll probably be some exclusivity going on with that. You may be able to, like, say, for instance, if Jay-Z drops another album for the first 2 weeks, the only way you would be able to listen to that album would be to go to Tidal. On Tidal or whatever. And of course, after that, though, it's free game because folks have figured out ways to rip shit from everywhere. So if they got the album on Tidal, you can rip the shit off of Tidal and then you'll look up and somebody has it on a file sharing site and there you go. And now it's on everybody's services because those people who download that music, they put it in it. They put it in what they listen to. Right. So it's one of those things, man. Like I understand that they want more money for the work that they put into, you know, for their work. I think everybody should be rightfully compensated for their work. The question is whether or not us as listeners, because our habits have changed so much, whether or not they're going to be able to get people willing to pay that sort of money to justify their costs, right? $20 a month is a lot to just spend, you know, for a service to listen to music. Right. Especially when you already have a consumer base who's used to either listening to shit for free or paying very little for it. Right. So it's going to be a real interesting thing for them to get this ball rolling, to get people willing to part with that, you know, with that amount of money for the services that they are providing. Now, another interesting thing somebody, you know, mentioned to me before this week they were talking about whether or not, you know, in talking about whether or not Tidal will ever be relevant, or, you know, are they ever going to change the space as far as streaming services are concerned because of the heavy names that are associated with it. And folks are, you know, they like to be associated with what's cool. So it was a big thing for them to have artists like Beyonce and J. Cole and Jay-Z and Kanye West. I forget, I said Kanye West's name not once. And Daft Punk and all these other artists, because it is telling you right off the top that a lot of the big cool names are here. This is where you need to be, right? But at the end of the day, like I said before, if only they are making it to where its title is exclusive to their content, it's going to be a real tough hill climb for Tidal to become revolutionary in the space, or to become maybe, say, the number one service as far as streaming music is concerned. But it was ambitious. I mean, that introduction was very ambitious, and I got the video to that introduction on thespareport.com. So, of course, you can check that out if and when you get the chance. Go to thespareport.com and check that video out, right? But let's get to the meat and potatoes. Let's get to the meat and potatoes of today's episode, right? Because we call today's episode Cafeteria Christians. And it's apropos, you know, considering it's Holy Week and everything. You had Good Friday, and tomorrow's Easter Sunday and everything else. And we're discussing Indiana's Religious Freedom Act, or the passing of the Religious Freedom Act that Governor Mike Pence signed into law in the state of Indiana. And it's one of those things where when biggers get caught in the middle of their own bullshit, they can't necessarily handle what it is. Like, they're caught off guard. They're real sensitive about the fact that folks are calling them bigots, and they're real sensitive about how they're portrayed, and they get upset, and they get indignant about how they're portrayed, right? And they call this the Religious Freedom Act. And it's supposed to protect one's ability to practice their religion how they see fit, right? The problem is with something like that is your religious freedom and how you practice your religion is already protected by the First Amendment, right? There was no real need for additional law to protect that right, especially when the right or this law is actually actively being used to discriminate against someone else, right? So I got this clip of Governor Mike Pence. He was on an episode of This Week with George Stephanopoulos on ABC this week, trying to explain how what the Religious Freedom Act does. So here it is.
This is about protecting the religious liberty of people of faith and families of faith across this country. That's what it's been for more than 20 years, and that's what it is now as the law in Indiana, George.
But I think one of the problems that people have pointed out is that in Indiana, your civil rights laws don't include sexual orientation as a protected class, and even some of the supporters of the bill who appeared with you when you signed the bill, Eric Miller of Advance America, wrote that it will protect those who oppose gay marriage. He put up this example. He said, Christian bakers, florists, and photographers should not be punished for refusing to participate in a homosexual marriage. So this is a yes or no question. Is Advance America right when they say a florist in Indiana can now refuse to serve a gay couple without fear of punishment?
Well, let me explain to you. The purpose of this bill is to empower, and has been for more than 20 years, George. This is not speculative. The purpose of this legislation, which is the law in all 50 states in our federal courts, and it's the law by either statute or court decisions in some 30 other states, is very simply to empower individuals when they believe that actions of government impinge on their constitutional First Amendment freedom of religion. And frankly, George, there's a lot of people across this country who you're looking at the Obamacare and the Hobby Lobby decision, looking at other cases, who feel that their religious liberty is being infringed upon. And the Religious Freedom Restoration Act at the federal level, and all the states now, including Indiana, who have it, are simply about addressing that. This is not about discrimination. This is about empowering people to confront government overreach, George.
All right. Now, you catch that at the very last at the last part of that, where he talked about this law isn't about discriminating against anyone, right? He said that. Now, even though what he that was a really long-winded answer to something that was a yes or no question, I think when you see that video, you can see George Stephanopoulos is really telling him this is a yes or no question. And he goes into these really long-winded explanations as to what this law is supposed to mean when he's asking him a very specific question. And he can't seem to answer this very specific question in a yes or no way, right? But he says that this law isn't to be used to discriminate against people of the LGBT community, right? He says this. He said that right there. Obviously, that memo didn't get out to the owners of Memories Pizza.
Well, Colleen, I learned from the workers here at this restaurant that they agree with Governor Pence and the signing of this bill. They say they have a right to believe in their religion and protect those ideals.
If a gay couple was to come in, like say we wanted, they wanted us to provide them pizzas for a wedding, we would have to say no.
Crystal O'Connor and her family are standing firm in their beliefs tonight. They've owned Memories Pizza and Ice Cream in Walkerton for almost 10 years, a small town business.
It's a cute little town, Walkerton.
With the small town ideals.
We're a Christian establishment.
They pride themselves in owning a business that reflects their religious beliefs.
We're not discriminating against anyone. It's just that's our belief. And everybody has the right to believe anything.
So when Governor Pence signed the Religious Freedom Restoration Act into law, the family was not disappointed.
We definitely agree with the bill.
I asked her about the negative backlash it's been getting for being a discriminatory legislation. Her response,
I do not think it is targeting gays. I don't think it's a discrimination.
She believes it's a way to protect businesses like hers.
Oh, it's supposed to help people that have a religious belief.
She says because she is a Christian, she and her family don't support gay marriage, and that is their right.
I agree with the bill.
Kevin O'Connor is Crystal's father, and you could say he's set in his ways. He believes the negative backlash the bill and its supporters are getting isn't fair.
That's a lifestyle that you choose. You know, I choose to be heterosexual. They choose to be homosexual. Why should I be beat over the head because they choose that lifestyle?
And now the O'Connor family tells me that if a gay couple or a couple belonging to another religion stepped into their restaurant to eat, they would never deny them service. They only say they would just not cater their wedding. Reporting live in Walkerton tonight, Alyssa Marino, ABC 57 News.
All right. Now, yeah, kind of contradicts everything that the governor said as far as what the law is supposed to do, especially when he says it's not supposed to be used to discriminate against LGBT people, right? Especially when this restaurant comes right out afterwards and say they agree with Governor Pence and this is what we're going to use this law for. You know, it's one of those things. But first of all, I want to know who's getting pizza at the wedding. Right, like who gets it? how many people do you know get their weddings catered with pizza? I don't know a whole hell of a lot. I don't know a whole hell of a lot, but they went to great pains to say, well, you know what? We just won't do their weddings, right? They went to great pains to go through that that whole thing to say that they wouldn't serve they wouldn't cater a gay wedding, right? Another thing too that. They didn't think that they were discriminating against anybody, right? It's funny how in the same breath where you say, I don't think this is a discriminatory action, I don't think this is a discriminatory law, and then use that same law to say that, well, you know what? Because of this law, I'm not going to do that for those people. I'm not going to serve those people in that capacity because the law says I don't have to. And it's because of my religion that I say I don't have to, right? And here's one of the things where, like, I get a little annoyed sometimes when it comes to, say, for instance, people of color, when they talk about whether or not gay people and people of color and the struggle of civil rights are one and the same, where sometimes we act as if this is like the struggle Olympics and we get a gold medal for having struggled the most. You know, like one of the things that when instances like this, if they can use a law like this to say, well, you know what, because of my religion, I don't want to service these people in this sort of way, how you don't think it could happen to you, right? And I think that's where a lot of it comes down to, like, you know, these people aren't necessarily, they aren't in a power position, right? So it's okay to kind of shit on them if and where possible, because they're not in a power position. Or so it's okay to shit on them because it's socially acceptable to a certain degree. Majority of us are heterosexual, so we don't have to deal with that particular issue. Let them deal with that shit on their own, right? And if you think like this sort of thing is only gonna stop, or could only stop at just like, you know what, we just gonna only do this for gay people, then I got a can of magic beans to sell you. Real talk. If you think that this sort of thing is only gonna stop at gay people, then I got a can of magic beans to sell you. Big ass can. Because it's stupid. It's stupid to think that way, to think that, for one, that this law isn't discriminatory, and for two, to think that it couldn't happen to you because someone has said this was their religion to not fuck with these people in this sort of way, right? So one of the things, too, that I think is very interesting about this whole discussion about what, you know, with gay people and heterosexual people and the eternal argument when it comes to this topic is choice, right? Because fundamentally, I think that's what this boils down to, right? Your choice of religion, their choice of not, you know, or their choice of not adhering to your religion, their choice of, or the belief in choice when it comes to sexual orientation, right? When you have someone who believes that your sexuality is a choice, you start hearing things like, this is my sexual preference, or this is their sexual preference, or, you know, their lifestyle. You know, preference and lifestyle get used a lot when we talk about this issue. Preference and lifestyle, because preference and lifestyle kind of lead towards it being a choice, right? So if you believe that it's a choice, and as you heard the gentleman in the video say, well, you know, I choose to be heterosexual. Did you really make that choice? I mean, did you really? You know, because when it comes down to, like, and I don't want to get stereotypical, I don't want to be cliche in anything that I say here, but when you start talking about whether or not it's a choice that you are heterosexual, and I'm a heterosexual male, I don't think I had a choice in it. You got to get into some of these questions. You got to kind of put it into a place where they can kind of understand how ridiculous they sound when they say it. So when you ask a heterosexual man who's heterosexual, of course, when you ask this man, have you ever been moved sexually? Have you ever been sexually aroused by another man at all? Chances are he's going to say no. Right? Chances are he's going to say no. Now, if he's being honest or not, we don't know. But chances are he's going to say no. Now, if he says no, he's never been sexually aroused by a man, he's never been moved sexually by a man at all in that way, then you would say, well, did you feel like you made a choice in that particular moment? Do you feel like you made the choice that, you know what? I don't really like men. Like, that was a choice for you. No, because you weren't hardwired to feel that way about another dude, that right? Right. So going by that logic, or you know, just going by that line of thinking, well, if you didn't think it was a choice for you, what makes you think that it was a choice for them to operate that way? What makes you think that was a choice for them? And why do you think that, you know, they would make that choice considering all of the hate that it comes with, right? You know, people in Arab countries are beheaded, and they're beaten, and they're caned, and all sorts of shit is happening all over the world when it comes to gay people. They're killed for the simple fact that they love the same sex, or they are predisposed to love the same sex. This is how they are. This is how they're wired. This wasn't a choice for them. You think you go into a country that is very, look at Russia. You go into a country like Russia and tell me that those people are choosing to live that way under threat of being killed and murdered and beat the hell up all the time. You tell me that's a choice for those people over there. You tell me that's a choice for the people who live here. Right? And that's the thing. I think it boils down to that whole thing of whether or not you believe it's a choice and whether it's not a choice. Now, as far as our religion is concerned, you are free to practice your religion however you see fit, unless your practice of your religion infringes upon the rights of someone else. Once your religion starts affecting how other people around you live, then we got a problem. Then we got a problem, right? You aren't able to just kind of impose your religion upon me because you don't agree with who I am, right? I mean, we can go back into the Bible and talk about how the Bible was used to justify slavery, right? Some of the same folks, some of our same people walk around talking about how it's biblically wrong for gay people to be who they are. And yet that same book was used to justify us being in positions of servitude, chattel slavery. And it was also used to tell the slaves to be docile and to serve their masters and with joy, right? That same book, the very same book that we hold up as the law and authority on how these people are supposed to be, was that same book that they used to discriminate against you and me. And so I think it's high time we kind of stop doing that kind of shit, really. It's high time we stop allowing that excuse and not even consider the fact that it isn't a choice for these people, that this is who they are, this is how they are. The same way that I didn't believe that I was born or that I had a choice. Well, shit, I didn't have a choice. I didn't have a choice in the fact that I was born black, and I didn't have a choice that I was born male. I don't believe that these people have this choice at all either, right? But going back into all of this about this restaurant, though, now, it's amazing how when we talk about we're living in a post, not necessarily post bigotry, because it's bigotry all around. I don't think anybody said post bigotry, but we have said post racial and shit, right? But it's amazing that after this story kind of went viral and everybody started figuring out what was going on in Indiana, and these people were the first to kind of step out on that limb and say, yeah, man, fuck that. These gay people can't, we ain't fucking with them like that, right? They got hit with a lot of backlash, and rightfully so. They got hit with a whole hell of a lot of backlash. Folks were pissed. Folks were letting them know they was hitting a Yelp up like, yo, man, fuck this restaurant. I ain't going there. Like, you know, they let it be known that, you know, bigotry shouldn't be tolerated and bigotry should be kind of shouted down. Right. Excuse me. And then GoFundMe happened. Right. GoFundMe has been like all over the place lately. I think one of the biggest things that happened was that the Detroit man that was walking 21 miles back and forth to work, his story kind of went viral and everybody kind of jumped on that thing, right? But now GoFundMe has had all sorts of crazy ass campaigns, folks raising money to go to Vegas for the Mayweather fight, all sorts of shit. Folks are like going to GoFundMe for a lot of things, right? And so a fund was made up on GoFundMe for Memories Pizza because of the backlash that they were receiving for discriminating against gay people and saying that they were going to discriminate against gay people using this law. And to date, right now, they have raised over, what's this? $842,592. $842,592 over the course of 2 days. They've made more money on this GoFundMe account than he's probably made in like maybe 10 years of doing that business. Folks really are about this fuck gay people life, right? Like, well, not, y'all know what I mean. They really are on this whole thing of we don't like this gay shit. To the tune of $842,000, 592 cents over the course of 2 days. That's a lot of money to say that you don't want these people to, you know, to say how you don't like these people and you don't want anything to do with these people. And to say that, well, I don't have any problems with gay people. I just don't agree. I don't agree with how they live. You know, that's a lot of money. That dude could probably retire. He could probably close up shop on that business. He doesn't have to work a day in his life now. Well, maybe. Depends on how well he works with the money. But even still, that's a lot of money, and that's from a lot of folks who are just as bigoted, who are just as ignorant, and who are just as intolerant as those of us, as they would say we are being towards their religion, right? Yeah. That's crazy. That's crazy. That we live in a time where, that we live in a time where it's it's, I don't know. Well, you can hide behind your religion to mistreat people. That we can still do that in 2015. I think that's what I'm going for. That in 2015, one can say, it's because of my religion that I don't fuck with you like that. And I can deny you service because of my religion. Eh. It's getting to a point, though, where the tide is turning on that, where, you know, folks aren't really necessarily taking it anymore. I mean, you think about not even 10 years ago. Has it been 10 years? Yeah, like 10, 11 years ago when, say, for instance, when President George Bush was running for president, he was running for re-election, and there were a lot of ballot initiatives on state ballots, you know, whether or not to legalize gay marriage, right? There was a lot of ballots across the country on statewide elections on whether or not we should have gay marriage. And then there's the Defense of Marriage Act and all of these other things. Like, these kind of ballots were like norm, and they were passing to deny folks the right to get married, to deny gay people the rights to get married. And in like 10, 11 years, that the attitude has kind of shifted on that a lot. And I'm a testament to it. I'm a testament to it. The attitudes have shifted a lot in the other direction, and I think rightfully so, man, to deny folks the ability to be who they are and to be happy in who they are and to allow them to just live, I think is a wonderful thing, man. And so hopefully, with all of the pressure that is going to be sent down on Indiana, I mean, because there have already been talks about whether or not the Final Four should still be in Indiana. People like Charles Barkley, you know, even Broken Clock is right twice a day. Even Charles Barkley is like, yo, this some bullshit, right? So if you got Charles Barkley's crazy ass like, yo, this some bullshit, yo, maybe you might want to, you know, change your line of thinking. Now, I did see an interview where Governor Mike Pence was talking about, you know, he was real defiant, you know, wasn't necessarily talking about putting any protections against discrimination against LGBT people or whatever else. But, you know, it's going to get to a point, man, if people are really serious about boycotting Indiana and, they start seeing monies that they would normally get start drying up, you got to hit them in the pockets. You got to hit them in the pockets. And once, you know, those coffers, or once that money stream starts drying up, and you know they're gonna have to at least take a look at it, and, you know what, reevaluate what it is that they think about this whole religious freedom act, right? As if you didn't have the freedom to already practice your religion, man. It's crazy as hell. The fuck, yeah, man. But it's time for like the listener feedback portion of the show, right? I got a couple emails that were written in since the last show. And so I want to give these people their shine, give them a response to what it is that they said to me, and see where it goes. So the first email that I got was from, I'm going to just call him by his first name, Harold. And Harold wrote in to say, greetings, Mr. Spann. My name is Harold and I'm from Provo, Utah. What's up, Utah? And I'm writing in response to your comments to another fellow about the Apple Watch. I believe you missed the point that a watch of that cost isn't aimed at regular Joes like you and I, but rather to an income bracket that doesn't flinch at that kind of money at all. If you would like to spend that kind of money on the Apple Watch, if they would like to spend that kind of money on the Apple Watch, then who are you to say the cost of the watch needs to be justified? That sounds a bit like bitterness at the fact that maybe you simply can't afford it. Ooh. As with most things Apple, it costs money for quality. Apple tends to produce some of the highest quality products in the computing space. So to me, that in and of itself justifies its price tag. The Apple Watch will be the Rolex of smartwatches. Just wait and see. Okay, that sounds like some fanboy shit like a motherfucker. I'm going to just real talk. That sounds like some straight up fanboy shit. But I'm gonna address this real quick, right? So, of course, in the last episode, I talked, you know, I got an email about, smartwatches and whether or not they were a gimmick, whether or not they were something that somebody should get into. They wrote asking me my opinion on the Apple Watch and smartwatches in general. And I gave my opinion on the Apple Watch somewhat, right? So, one of the things that you wrote in, you said that I think you believe I missed the point about the cost of the watch. It's not aimed at regular Joes like you and me. I understood that. I definitely understand that. I mean, think about it. I don't have $17,000 just laying around to go spend on a watch. I don't. So I understood that, you know, that kind of thing isn't targeted towards someone like myself. Now, someone like maybe say with like a Floyd Mayweather or maybe a LeBron James or a Michael Jordan, you know, some people that got that kind of disposable income to kind of, you know, throw around, then by all means, I'm pretty sure that those are the kind of people that are going to go about buying a watch like that. The only thing that the point that I was making with that was the Apple Watch. At $17,000, outside of the precious metals that they may add to it, like, you know, you get it in gold and stuff like that. Outside of that, that watch and the $350 version of that watch are essentially the same, right? They're essentially the same. The screens are the same. The RAM is the same. The chipset is the same. Everything in that watch is the same. It doesn't do anything. It doesn't enhance anything. They didn't put any improved specs on the watch. That's all I was saying. So if you're going to spend $17,000 on the Apple Watch and the $350 watch has the exact same shit in the Apple Watch that the $17,000 watch does, it's like, okay, like that's kind of gratuitous. That's all I was saying. It ain't about bitterness, man. I ain't trust me. I'm not even in the market for an Apple Watch. I own Android devices. I didn't even want an Apple Watch, right? So there's that. You wrote in to say that it sounds like a bit of bitterness. I'm not bitter. Trust me, I'm not bitter. Right. You write in also to say that as with most things Apple, it costs money for quality. Apple tends to produce some of the highest quality products in the computing space. That could be debated. I think a lot of the thing with Apple is they charge a premium price for their products. The thing is, for what you get in those products, you can get those same things in other products for less money, right? So if you paying, say for instance, $1,500 for a MacBook Pro, doesn't necessarily mean that this Ultrabook that only costs $800 isn't capable of doing the exact same things that MacBook Pro is, right? What you're paying for is, you know, a lot of times it's with the Apple experience and the, you know, the enclosed Apple ecosystem, right? Because they have a lot of proprietary things about their system that makes it work together well. And I applaud them for that. Now, to say that just because it's Apple, that in and of itself justifies the cost of the Apple Watch, it's kind of crazy there, fam. That's kind of crazy. But I'm going to let you roll with that one, right? And then lastly, you said Apple will be the Rolex of smartwatches. Just wait and see. Okay. That may very well be true. That may very well be true, but here's the thing: when it comes to watches, and I have a lot of watches. One of the things with watches, especially when you start talking about Rolexes and things like that, is part of the reason why you spend that kind of money is because of the actual quality and workmanship and craftsmanship of the watch, right? So, say for instance, if your grandfather was one of those few people who owned a Rolex, that he bought that Rolex. It had the precious metals in it. It had the workmanship and the craftsmanship of a very fine timepiece. And you know what? When he passes away, or for whatever reason, or like say for instance, his son gets married or whatever, he can give that watch to his son as a gift. And now his son can give that to his son, and that's now a gift to him. It becomes a family heirloom, right? And that watch works just as good as it was when his kid's grandfather first bought the watch. That watch works just as good as the day his grandfather bought that watch. And so after a while, it starts justifying and appreciating because of the fact that watch is still just as good. The thing with the Apple Watch is that, say for instance, even if you do have $17,000 to spend on an Apple Watch, is that watch is going to be obsolete in a year, right? No matter what, that watch is going to be obsolete in a year. They're already making the Apple Watch 2. And that's especially in the tech space, that's just pretty much how it rolls. They're already working on the improvements on the next Apple Watch or the next Moto 360 or the next Samsung Gear or the next LG Watch R. All of these watches, they're kind of disposable, right? So take, for instance, like I got a Moto 360. I know that my Moto 360, after about 2 years, that Moto 360 isn't going to work as well as it did when I first got it, right? And some of the software, you know, the software that they're going to add to the next versions of these watches are going to demand more resources in the hardware than that watch is able to provide. So now I can't use it at all. Right. So that's the thing when it comes. You may talk about these Apple watches being the Rolexes and smartwatches and all this other shit. But it's, like I said, that remains to be seen. But all I was saying was $17,000 is a hell of a lot of money to spend on a watch when the $350 watch does the exact same thing with the exact same specifications on the inside of the watch. That's all I was saying. But I appreciate you writing in, Harold. I really do. And chill out with the fanboy shit. Just chill out with the fanboy shit. And I hope to hear from you again soon, brother. Real talk. And the next email I got was from Janet Jackson, not that one. Okay. Hey, Span, this is Janet. I'm a longtime listener, and this is my first time sending any feedback. I'm so sorry that it's taken me this long. I started listening to you when you were around episode 16. Oh, okay. Where you did the skit placing you in the club when Chris Brown and Drake got into a fight. I thought it was hilarious. Okay. I remember that one. She says, not only because of how you told the story, but if I didn't know any better, because of how much detail you included in the story, it was almost believable. And I look forward to listening to more from you. Then you take these long breaks, and I, along with I'm sure many others, thought you had given up on podcasting. Let me be the first to tell you that I'm so glad that you're still doing it. Your show gives me not only something to listen to while I'm at work, but it also gives me something to think about. And I love that you stuck with it despite whatever it may have been that could have been keeping you away from the mic. You've grown a lot on this show, not only in how you view the world, but in how you present your view of it. I get to watch videos of the Span Report now. Yay. All right, now, yeah. It's so much easier to share your show with my friends who still don't know what podcasts are. Yes, I'm spreading the word. Now, I don't want to take too much time, but I did want to write in to let you know that I look forward to every episode, and I can't wait to see how much larger the Span Report becomes. Yours truly, from a longtime fan, Janet Jackson, not that one. Damn. Oh, shit. Damn. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much, sister, for writing in. Wow. Yeah, I really do. I really do appreciate you writing in and riding with the Span Report for as long as you have. I know it's been challenging for those of you who have been listening to me from the beginning. Even from, like, say, for instance, the when I was a shout out man on the Haterazzi radio show, for those of you who have been riding with the Span Report from the beginning, you know, when I was doing the shout outs and when I had music playing and when I did the Span Man Laws and all of those things, man, I really do appreciate y'all riding with me and still being here. And it definitely means a lot for you to say that. It definitely means a lot for you to say that. And yeah, I'm very appreciative of you listening, sister. I'm very appreciative that you're spreading the word. Hopefully the Span Report can get a little larger, you know. That is the hope, right? That is the hope. So yeah, like, you doing that is big. You doing that is big, and I'm from the bottom of my heart, I really do thank you. Indeed, I thank you so much for listening to the Span Report and spreading the word about the Span Report and letting your voice be heard. I really do. I really do. And I don't know much else to say. I don't have much else to say after that. You know, I do. I appreciate that, sister. Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah. Yeah, we're coming up to the end of the show, but before I get out of here, of course, I got to let you guys know how to get at me here at the Span Report Podcast and let your voice be heard. Call the hotline. Leave me a voicemail. Area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave those voicemail messages. I will play those messages on the show and, of course, respond to those messages as well. Hit up the email. The email, of course, to the Span Report is feedback@thespanreport.com. Leave those email messages just like that sister did, and I will read those and respond to those emails on the show as well. You want to chop it up with me live during the week, hit me up on Twitter and on Instagram. My name on both of those platforms, of course, is Mr_Spam. And you can also go to thespamreport.com for everything Spam Report related, man. Everything Spam Report related, the podcast, the videos, everything at thespamreport.com. And do me a big solid. Do me a big solid. Leave me a review on iTunes and on Stitcher. That really helps the show, that helps the show grow. That helps the show grow by letting folks on those platforms know this is what you're listening to and why you listen to it. I really do appreciate everybody who listens, and I got to get out of here, y'all. So I'm going to talk to you guys later. Peace.